The next big ticket item on the federal government's rural agenda is the release of its Northern Australia White Paper, the blueprint for development across the north of our continent. Promises of riches from the north have been part of Australia's conversation for decades now and have lured their share of investors and prospectors. But with much of Queensland in drought and deep scepticism in parts of the north, many people living there are yet to be convinced. The Federal Treasurer, Joe Hockey, describes Northern Australia as an extraordinary area of untapped promise. But locals who call North Queensland home say after 30 years of rhetoric, now is the time for critical investment in roads, water, energy and communications. This special report was compiled by our Rural Queensland team who hit the road to meet the optimists and those who aren't yet convinced.
I'm heading out on the Flinders Highway, a long, largely straight, mostly isolated road stretching from the port city of Townsville west through drought-stricken sheep and cattle country to Cloncurry, near the Northern Territory border. The tyranny of distance can be a major hurdle for development and relationship building, but social media is changing all of that. Kylie Stretton lives and works in the regional beef city of Charters Towers. She's also a big fan of Facebook and has set up a special page.
Ask an Aussie Farmer is just a platform on Facebook mainly. We also run off Twitter, but Facebook is our main platform where consumers can come and ask farmers directly how they produce their food and fibre so that we're not relying on Google so much. They can actually get it straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. We've been going for just 3 years. A couple of months ago, we reached nearly a million people, getting the good stories of Aussie Ag out there to all those people here and overseas.
Further west along the highway is Hughenden, on the banks of the Flinders River. An incongruous giant replica of the Muttaburrasaurus catches the eye of visitors in a region famous for its dinosaur bones. But the community is far more worried about the future than the past, in particular how the federal government's $100 million for so-called beef roads will help them. A recent CSIRO study shows fully sealing some of the roads in the district would slash the time and cost of trucking cattle to and from the sale yards. 73, 74 cent, you're betting. But President of the Hughenden Chamber of Commerce, Les Curtis, says it could open up even more markets.
It opens up development right across the board for the country areas. It opens up the area, you know, for the grazier. The other thing is too is the agricultural up in the north with your bananas and your fruit growers up there. They're pushing big time because they can get their product to the market in Melbourne. I think about nearly 11 hours quicker than going down the coast. But it makes sense, road. And our times now, and our economy now, we were looking at the saving the dollar, saving fuel. You know, fuel is going high, everything's getting expensive. So this road here makes sense to get it done, and it benefits more than Hughenden. It benefits everybody across the board. To be realistic, 3 years is probably the deadline. You know, we've got to get the road done in 3 years.
Creating more agricultural markets is a key goal of the Flinders River Agricultural Precinct, chaired by Hughenden cattle and sheep producer and former mayor Brendan McNamara. He's already hard at work on the public-private partnership model, helping connect graziers who have access to the Flinders River with people who have the expertise and money to develop irrigated agriculture. The federal budget announced $5 billion in potential loans, as well as tax breaks on water facilities for farmers, which Mr. McNamara says could stimulate investment.
Hopefully it'll be a good benefit. Obviously people would probably be coming up from down south, other irrigation areas, and if there are concessional loans available, I think they'd be looking at taking advantage of those to do some development along the river. Previously, capital works on water infrastructure tax deductible over 3 years or longer. So if it's a major investment to get set up to start with, and we've got a 100% tax deduction to start with, would certainly be a good incentive.
However, he says the first ingredient the project needs is more water.
There was 80,000 megalitres allocated in 2013. There are also some sleeper licences along the river. And the other issue at the moment is there is now trading along the river, so you can trade water between allocations. There was a report put out in 2014 by the Department of Natural Resources, which recommends another 266,000 megalitres be allocated out of the river. That report is currently with the Minister Anthony Lynham. to look at the submissions that were made, and hopefully he'll make a decision soon, and hopefully it'll be a favourable decision to release another 266,000 megalitres out of the Flinders River. CSIRO and Queensland Government Department has spent about $7 million doing reports, so we believe the science backs up to release that water and not affect the fisheries in the Gulf and not affect the reliability of current entitlements.
Corbett Tritton is the poster boy of what could be achieved if more water was released from the Flinders catchment. He is one grazier lucky enough to have a long-standing water allocation, and he stores 14,000 megalitres in a vast above-ground tank to irrigate 540 hectares of land and feedlot cattle. His property near Richmond, cracked and crumbling from drought, makes way for vast fields of mung beans as far as the eye can see, drooping with produce almost ready to harvest. Mr. Tritton says he wants to see the floodgates opened so more producers can follow suit.
Not a lot of people have the capital to invest, so that's why it's quite important that what we're doing here perhaps demonstrates there is profit in it. We'd love to see that ourselves, but on a more broader scale, like, it'd be great if it did work and then people could replicate that, it'd be good and go and do bigger and better things. There's certainly a shift. There's talk, there's rhetoric about it. Whether that's going to happen, you know, I don't know. But I think it is a way that we can diversify our smaller communities into more prosperity. We have lots of water in the north at times, not much at the moment. But I've lived here all my life and it has flooded and we're droughted. So one of the principal things they need to do is give some incentives for farmers, for people to take up water licences and to develop them. And I think there should be a caveat on the licence that it is developed, and then they get the licence so they can demonstrate that they're actually going to do it and do it before they get the water. Once they build the storage, then you get your licence to fill it. That way, there'll be investment. There'll be people spending money in our towns and buying diesel and buying food, and things will happen.
More development along the river means less water flowing through the system, something the Wilderness Society is concerned about. And cropping comes with another set of environmental concerns: land clearing, new chemicals, and the construction of earthen tanks and dams. But Mr. Tritton says any scepticism about whether it could be done dried up after his first cotton harvest.
I remember going to a meeting and addressing a group in town, and one old fella said, "I'll believe it when I see cotton going down the main street." And that year we sold, I think it was 900 round bales of cotton. It was close to, it was around that time anyway. But I don't think there's farming versus, you know, anything else. I think people generally support whatever can happen, as long as it's not detrimental. And we live here, we don't want to wreck the show.
There's no cotton on the main street of Huindon today, but the business owners who would have witnessed the trucks roll past are only just clinging on. Shops are still open, but the locals who own them have started hanging signs in front windows urging people to support local business. The slow decline of the wool industry, loss of rail jobs, and years of drought have taken a toll on the town's population and economy, forcing 60 children to leave the local school. Boutique owner Sherilee Honorey works part-time to support her business and says people just aren't spending money in town.
Things are quiet. Something like my business is a luxury item, so nothing that I make or sell has a use-by date, so therefore it is a luxury. So people just are just borrowing the basics and they're making do with what they've got. They're recycling, they're reusing, and they're just making it last. I believe there is a fear factor of that at the moment, that if one door does close, there will be others who will start thinking about whether they can stay open or not. I think it's come down to a lot of places have cut back on staff. As staff leave, they haven't been replacing them. They're cutting back hours. They're trying to hold on as much as they possibly can to keep these things in our town, because if we lose them, it's a hard thing to get back. So we've just got to fight just that little bit harder, all buckle our belts a little bit stronger and keep going.
But the picture isn't all bleak. The sporting community of Huindon is alive and thriving, attracting new visitors and money to the town. The introduction of rugby sevens a few years ago to the traditional league town has sparked big interest, as well as chugby, translated as chick rugby. It started with two teams last year and is expected to double this year with more players from across the wider region. One of those is Hannah Brown from nearby Prairie.
Girls from different communities, so like Longreach and Richmond, are coming, and like we don't really mix with them often, so it's really good just to get to know like different girls around the northern area, so it's make lots of new friends and stuff.
Australia no longer rides on the sheep's back like it once did, and locals say shearer numbers in Huendon have whittled down to just one. But despite that and the drought, the chief steward of the wool pavilion at the local show, Jane McNamara, says fleece entries were impressive this year.
We've been very encouraged because with the drought we really thought this year our wool entries would be down, and we said, well, we'll endeavour to have a wool section. And luckily we have all of the existing people in the shire have all put in entries, so we're expecting between 50 and 60 fleeces, which is quite presentable. I mean, in our heyday we used to get over 100, but I've been told by one of our competitors that I'm going to have to roll two of mine in to beat one of his. So
oh, it's on. The competition is on.
Oh, well, yes, Flinders Shire used to be really strong with wool. There's about 8 wool growers left in the Flinders Shire now. There used to be around about 1 million sheep left in this shire. There's about 70,000 sheep probably left in the shire now, so it's sad for the town because the shearers always used to spend all their money here on the weekends.
Development along the Flinders is just as much about attracting people as attracting investment. 2 hours west of Huendon, Richmond is also feeling the pinch. It needs families to stay in town to support businesses and keep children in the local schools. And it all starts that fateful moment when two people meet and fall in love. Our ABC team quizzed locals about finding love in the bush.
Hello, my name's Jamie Earn.
So tell me, have you been lucky in love in Western Queensland?
Many times.
Have you found a special someone out here?
No.
Are you looking? Are you single and ready to mingle?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Hi, my name's Carla Watson.
And you're working here at the Federal Pub.
Yeah.
And I've heard, just talking to a couple of people around, that they met their love of their life here.
Yeah.
Have you been lucky in love?
Not so far, but it depends if you're looking for it, I guess. There's a lot of good guys around here, but I'm very focused just on my job right now.
And are there a lot of single people in Richmond?
There is a few, but you find a lot of people, they settle down pretty early because being in the outback and stuff, if you find the one you like, you kind of just grab onto them, don't you?
Young single people in Richmond have been meeting their husbands and wives at the Federal Palace Hotel for generations. And for one night a year, a small committee of locals looking for love brings everyone together for the annual Spouse Hunters Ball. Tamara Vidalich explains.
The Spouse Hunters Ball has been going since 1982, and there have been about 50 unions since then. We know there's been about 6 from the 2007 ball, so we've definitely got a man drought as well as a water drought. There are more women to men. A lot of the men do work out on the properties as opposed to a lot of the women probably more live in town, so we don't sort of see them around town as much as you do see us girls. There is the element of a slight embarrassment in a town of our size when it comes to app dating or online dating. For those that are serious about finding a life partner, you know, it can become a bit jovial when it comes to things like online dating. So we try to keep it a distinguished event, that if people are serious, can really look for love if that's what they're there for.
People travel from far and wide to find that special someone, even from Julia Creek, the next town on the map. It used to be a thriving bush town. The two family-run supermarkets across the road from one another on the main street is proof of the boom. Even though the Shire is suffering through its third year of drought, in town the sprinklers are running and the lawns and gardens are bright green thanks to limitless access to the Great Artesian Basin. And that's one reason Mayor Belinda Murphy believes Julia Creek is the prime location for an abattoir. The Shire has been working hard to attract investment for an $80 million meatworks to supply up to 200,000 beef carcasses to China each year.
For us, we made it simple. We basically said, do we have the land? Do we have water and power? Do we have the will to do this? And are we situated in a catchment area where we believe beef producers need a better deal? And we ticked all those boxes. We'd rather fail to have a meatworks built than have a meatworks built that fails. We need it to be viable. We need it to be sustainable. We need it to be the right sort of investment.
It's one of three abattoir proposals across northern Queensland, and Councillor Murphy says securing support from investors and the government is the final step.
I feel like we've made a lot of headway, and certainly with support from producers around here, with support from the investors and with support from the federal government, if they really want to drive development in northern Australia, let's get on with it, get something built, get these beef producers a better farm gate return, let's bring some competition back into the market, and let's instill some confidence so that northern Australia, people can see we are worth investing in and it's not just a white paper.
The abattoir plans are stirring up excitement, but some residents remain sceptical about the proposal, as well as the wider promises to develop the north. Cattle producer Casey Lord has lived in Western Queensland for 30 years and says it's just the same old cycle people in the bush have heard many times before.
Each successive government seems to talk about it, but nothing ever really happens. They'll give millions of dollars to do another investigation into it and nothing happens. I don't see anything more positive that is being done to do the development.
Cattle producer Casey Lord ending that story from the Rural Queensland team presented by Eliza Rogers. I hope you've enjoyed A Country Breakfast this week. No doubt there'll be plenty of discussion about the role of Northern Australia in coming weeks. And if, like me, you think some of those voices we heard warranted a whole lot more exploring, you can hop online to abc.net.au/rural to check out extended features and interviews from the Queensland team's road trip. Thanks to Angie Grant for technical production this week. Hope you stay with us on RN.